Okay, good morning. Might as well get started. I think it's just gone past the hour. How many of you were at one of the vendor parties yesterday evening? Quite a few of you, that's pretty impressive, turning up to this talk at this time of the morning. So thanks very much for coming along. Today, or this morning, in the next hour or so, we're going to talk about Office 365 Identity Federation. My name's Spence Harbour. I'm a SharePoint architect. I'm based in Edinburgh in the UK, and I have a bunch of badges. That's not really relevant. What is relevant to this topic is my experience in the identity management space, which I was doing long before I got involved in SharePoint. And indeed, it's been very interesting to see the path of this technology and the practice discipline of identity management over the last 10 or 15 years. So the agenda for the session today is pretty straightforward. The first sort of chunk of time was spent discussing really the practice discipline of identity management and why that increases in importance when thinking about deploying cloud solutions, and obviously specifically referring to Office 365. And we'll also touch on a few sort of examples of where the pain of not implementing identity management tooling and business processes, you know, dramatically lessens the user experience with cloud solutions. Then we'll dive into the technology. So I'm basically going to say it's not all about technology, and then I'm going to spend the rest of the talk talking about technology. Okay? Obviously, this is a technical conference, at least this track is technical, so that's our focus. So we'll walk through the various options, quite a high level, really, in terms of how we deal with the different types of experience the end users will get compared to the amount of implementation work that's necessary. And then really the kind of key takeaway for the overall session is about using Windows Azure to reduce the amount of sort of on-premises infrastructures necessary to do identity federation for Office 365. Now, I did note earlier that this session is in the hybrid track. Obviously, this content is relevant for those looking at hybrid deployment scenarios, but it's really relevant for anybody deploying Office 365. It's not specific to hybrid in any way, shape, or form. Just for my benefit, could I see a show of hands, please? How many of you are currently running or have customers running in Office 365 and have already implemented Identity Federation? Okay, that's pretty good. So about half of you, roughly. And that's good to see. I've asked that question in previous years. Obviously, the numbers increase every time we talk to this topic. Okay, so let's now kind of switch and talk about identity management from a practice discipline perspective. And some of you may be familiar with some of the statements on these slides, as they retain their relevance, and indeed their relevance increases as we look at cloud solutions. And very much with Office 365, the reality is, for the richest end user experience, implementing identity management tooling and processes is fundamentally a prerequisite in order to be able to drive types of scenarios in this world, or in hybrid scenarios as well. So regardless of whether you're actually doing online or not, anytime you're basically dealing with SharePoint, we're now in the identity management business as well as the SharePoint business or the Office 365 business. So it's another example of the kind of core infrastructure technology that SharePoint practitioners, you know, need to be familiar with. Not necessarily need to be, you know, experts across those topics, but be familiar with the requirements and be able to work with others in terms of the implementation. So it's another example of where we have to learn even more technology that's kind of out with the core focus of what we're doing directly for customers. And with SharePoint 2013, you know, that it's always been important, but with SharePoint 2013 and with every new release of SharePoint, it becomes more and more important, because the direction of the product and the way the decisions have been made in terms of the under infrastructure plumbing that supports the key new investment areas, everything from SharePoint apps through to server-to-server scenarios where we're connecting to other Microsoft systems. All of these things fundamentally require a user profile for the individual users. And there's obviously a major sort of gap, if you like, here in terms of being able to deal with anonymous users who obviously won't have a profile. But with that except for that particular use case, all of the key investment areas fundamentally rely on profiles. So therefore, the importance of having accurate information becomes even more important in order to get the richest end user experience. And what I'm talking about here isn't really the end user experience for sign-in, although that is obviously very important. But if you think about a hybrid search scenario, for example, which obviously there's other content on at the conference this week, the quality and the relevance of search results is going to be directly impacted by the quality of the data available in the profile store and other places as well. So, many key scenarios require this base level of identity federation to be implemented. And pretty much all of the talks that you'll hear at this conference on hybrid scenarios will include, a section on the work necessary to get that base infrastructure in play in order for the scenario to light up and be possible. And Office 365 itself is very similar. With each, rev, if you like, with each revision, the dependency on this infrastructure plumbing increases. There is no product better than SharePoint to expose weak identity management. It's not SharePoint's fault, right? This is actually a good thing. Identity management has been around for a very long time, and traditionally, generally, is kind of, in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, is kind of pushed to the background or, we'll deal with it later, and, slowly over time, little small incremental improvements are made. One of the key things that kind of pushes things and accelerates that is the deployment of SharePoint-based solutions, because it becomes much more obvious to end users, what the implication of poor quality sign-in experience and poor data quality and consistency and availability. So as soon as we implement things that make have a big reliance on this technology, but also expose it more to the end users, than traditionally like IT operations staff and so on. How many of you work for a large corporation with more than 100,000 users, just out of interest? Yeah, quite a few of you. So you know, with that many objects in Active Directory, there is inevitable challenges in managing that life cycle. And so if you're from an IT background and you've been involved with running that system, you've probably been arguing for more investment in identity management, since it started. Whereas, nobody really listens to IT, right? It's only when the end users or the business complain about the solution where things kind of driven forward. Again, Office 365 amplifies that even further because, it's not just about SharePoint. It's about Exchange and Link and Yammer and, all the other things that are going to be coming on down the line. And they have the similar dependency. So this is very important because it's really driving the importance of this, because we could have been having a talk about this at the very about identity management at the very first SharePoint conference back in 2005 or sometime like that, and but it really wouldn't have gotten any legs because unless an organization is already kind of committed to go down this road, there's no real sort of business justification for doing it. But now with the cloud being effectively the primary delivery capability for services, we must have it in play because it doesn't work without it, and the things that do work without it degrade significantly. So in some respects, if you do have an identity background, this the cloud's kind of the dream scenario in terms of something that actually pushes the importance of this stuff. Now, the last sort of bullet, if you like, on the slide is perhaps the most important thing to take away if you're not experienced in identity management, is that fundamentally it's not a technical discipline. It's not a technical endeavor. The biggest challenges you will face will all be non-technical political considerations. And this is true, you know, regardless of the technology platform that you work with. It's true regardless of however many sort of silver bullets you might be sold by vendors over the, you know, the course of deployments. So getting the identity management sort of consulting side of things in play in projects is hugely important. And you know, that's part of the reason for doing the, having this talk as well, is it's probably the single biggest barrier to quickly ramping up an Office 365 enterprise project, is because there's kind of like, you know, the hidden cost of preparing to move to the cloud and implementing identity federation. So it's 10% technology, 90% all the other stuff, right? Politics, driving consensus, explaining in non-technical terms to business decision makers the decisions they need to make, and providing the pros and cons and so on. Now, right now, where we are with the journey to the cloud, not just with Microsoft, but across the industry, you could maybe argue that that 10% is more like 15%, because, you know, at the moment, it's not 100% there in terms of the tooling, because we, as an industry, do not have visibility of all the different deployment scenarios that customers want to do, right? Because this is still quite a new space in comparison to you know, on-premises collaboration scenarios and so on. But you know, before long, and especially with the pace of change that's being driven, especially by Windows Azure, you know, it'll be this way. It really is, the majority of things are non-technical. Just got some examples here of some of the things that are predominantly non-technical. This isn't everything. It's kind of like the highlights, if you like. And for those who've already implemented identity federation or work in the identity space, you know, you'll be very familiar with these things. Ownership is perhaps one of the most difficult things to grasp hold of and make progress with, especially in large corporations. And give you some examples. I certainly can't give you customer names. Let's just say a large international airline is a good example of an organization where data ownership is a huge deal, both for information security reasons, but also because a large number of, you know, line of business systems in a business like that are, you know, frankly quite old-fashioned, right? I'm sure you've all seen the console-style applications that airlines use for managing flight information. You know, when you check in or go to the lounge in an airport, you give your boarding pass or your phone to the staff there. You know, they'll alt tab from Facebook back to the system that they use for managing the passenger manifests, and you know, that's basically a console application. So there's lots of silos of data, and in many organizations, it's certainly not true for all organizations, but the bigger the organization, the more likely it is to be the case, is, you know, that the silos are very heavily protected in terms of ownership. You know, the HR department, for example, is going to be very protective about the personnel ID attribute for users. It's probably sitting in a little database somewhere. You know, they're very nervous about allowing anybody else or any other system to, you know, touch that data, work with it, and so on. Departmental controls is similar in terms of, you know, understanding what needs to happen in terms of workflow and transformation, and indeed privacy of that data as it moves between different systems in the business. And of course, the reason for highlighting this is we're also now talking about this and moving this data into somebody else's data center, right? Into a Microsoft data center, which could be across, it could be in a different continent. from where the original sort of authoritative source of that data lives. This is changing. This is very interesting for me. I did a meta-directory project in 1998 for a power company, and to see the change in organizational culture in that particular customer over the years has been great. But it has, it has taken that long for them to really change fundamentally the culture within the business to get the most benefit out of its systems. So once we've dealt with those problems, then we've got to deal with the quality of the data. How many of you here are Microsoft employees? Go on, you can admit it. It's okay. I'm just joking. So you'll be very familiar with the frequency of change in your global address list, right? People moving between different teams all the time. Because it traditionally is quite difficult to make changes to this data because of the previous topic we were just discussing, quite often it's out of date, telephone numbers are wrong, office locations are wrong, this kind of stuff. Now you might be thinking, well, that doesn't really matter, we can clean it up later. And that's true, and that's generally what ends up happening. The inevitable consequence of kind of attacking these areas of consideration is some form of data cleansing, some tidy up work for the systems that will be authoritative for each particular area. So it might be Active Directory, line of business systems, PeopleSoft, those kind of things. But as soon as you kind of sync that information into SharePoint or Office 365, whichever way you're going there, it's going to be immediately obvious just what the quality of data is. If you're doing people search scenarios, that's a classic example of where searching by expertise is a fantastic way to leverage the power of SharePoint. But it only works, obviously, if that data is there and accurate. Otherwise, it actually causes more problems than it solves because you're consistently hitting up somebody about a topic that they've not been working on for the last 3 years, for example. Then on the right-hand side of the slide, we start talking a little bit more technical in terms of the quality of systems, really from perhaps a infrastructure perspective. So one example on the slide there is the health of Active Directory. And we're just picking Active Directory as the most common example. It could be any directory service here. But the larger the corporation, the more likely that the Active Directory has grown organically over time. For many, many corporations, indeed, it used to be Windows NT4 domains. And they've continually upgraded and taken both the good and the bad from the previous versions as they go. So you get many customers worried about the size of Active Directory from different kind of angles, and therefore it makes them nervous about using Active Directory as an authoritative source of some data. Unfortunately, AD also has there's a historical, ambivalence towards it as an enterprise scale solution by a large number of identity management people out there in the marketplace. I mean, those concerns are, never were valid, of course, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist out there. And so AD can often be in a poor state because generally it's perceived as being really just the sign-in mechanism in a lot of places, in a lot of companies. Another big consideration for us specifically when we're dealing with Office 365 is the proliferation of forests and domains, specifically forests, really. One of the key decisions that we have to make as we look to implementing Office 365 is, are we in a position to be able to consolidate and reduce the number of forests in our organization? Because, the cloud does change, perhaps the way we need to design and think about our Active Directory topology and infrastructure to support the scenarios that we're now attempting to deliver. Of course, if the AD was designed 10 years ago, the cloud wasn't on anybody's horizon at that point, or at least not in general, as a general statement. Same thing for line of business systems. One thing that I come across very often in Europe, this just my personal experience, is a lot of systems who are the authoritative owner for key data. They're running on a single server, which has got, you know, two CPUs and 4 gig of RAM, and is, you know, a very old system. And the people that built the system, you know, the one guy or whatever that wrote the classic ASP application, you know, they've long since gone. Nobody really knows much about the application. Everybody's frightened to touch it, you know. So if we start pummeling that with a metadirectory solution, you know, that's going to have large consequences as well. So there's a lot to think about here, and the more systems you have that store this data, the bigger the work is, or the more time it will take. Similarly, access control is a very important aspect of this in terms of thinking about regulatory controls. So identifying, this is going to sound difficult, identifying personally identifiable information in the organization, making sure that you're meeting all of your regulatory obligations, especially across different regions in the world. Different parts of the world have different rules on, you know, what type of data is allowed. Different companies also will have different policies in terms of things as simple as the user profile photograph, right? In many countries, it is not acceptable to, you know, actually have that stuff stored and displayed in the system. And of course, with the move to Office 365 or any cloud solution, you know, this becomes a bigger issue, especially if there's border controls considerations as well. We also need to think about how our metadirectory solution is going to then, you know, actually sort of authenticate or be authorized to access these silos of data. And the last one is something that's very topical given the recent, let's just say, security incident that Apple have had, is the large majority of customers doing metadata solutions today still do not perform the operations over secure sockets layer or in any other form of transport layer encryption. So that personally identifiable information that we've just been talking about is flowing over the network in clear text. Obviously, it's not going to be flowing over the network in clear text when we federate with Office 365, because Microsoft quite rightly, you know, will only allow that operation to take place over secure sockets. But inside the organization, this is quite common, especially if we remember that old line of business system that's running on Windows NT4, right? I mean, they definitely wouldn't have built it using SSL way back in 1997 or whatever when it was first developed. So, that, you know, this is not all up. There's plenty of other things we need to consider, but it's probably, it should give you the right flavor of the type of, you know, really non-technical, for the most part, considerations that we need to plan for. And the reason for stressing this so heavily is, for all the identity management work that I've done, whether it be you know, metadirectories, whether it be, you know, SharePoint profile sync, all the way through to the work I do with Office 365, these are the things that cause the problems on projects and make, you know, cause project delays. The technical side of it very rarely is the cause of delays in this space. That's, you know, need to qualify that. There's plenty of other areas where, you know, technical stuff goes wrong. Okay, so getting a bit more cloud specific. As I mentioned earlier, you know, cloud deployment models or service delivery models based on cloud technology really sort of amplify and pushes identity considerations to the forefront. Traditionally, you know, as I was saying earlier, these things are kind of, in many cases, pushed to the background, and it's a very sort of slow process over many years to clean up the data and so forth. But the reality is, especially if we want to do hybrid, we can't do it unless this is in place. Does that mean all the data needs to be perfect? Of course not. We're never going to have that scenario. But, you know, we need a metadirectory in place in order to do this. Luckily, Microsoft have done most of the work there in terms of the service that's offered. But it means we're going to hit all of these issues a lot sooner on the project than we would otherwise do. this really is, from my point of view, one of the best side benefits, if you like, of Office 365 and cloud technology, because it makes the, you know, it pushes this right out in front, and everybody who's working in this space is going to need to become effectively identity management practitioners, identity management experts by proxy. And that's a really good thing for customers, because it means that we can finally start to really leverage more quickly and get return on investment from scenarios such as social in the enterprise, hybrid search scenarios, those kind of things that have long held a lot of promise but have been held back by this and other plumbing under behind the scenes that, you know, means we're not getting the most out of it. And it takes a long time to realize that return. As far as the Microsoft tooling is concerned, it's worth pointing out that Microsoft has been a clear leader in this space for many years. Indeed, they were the first vendor ever to offer, well, that's not strictly true, Zoomit, and then Microsoft acquired Zoomit, was the first vendor to provide a state-based meta directory, which is what we'll use when we configure Identity Federation with Office 365. Now, many people sort of make a little, there's an in-joke in Microsoft identity management world. The best thing about Microsoft's meta directory is that it's state-based. The worst thing about Microsoft's meta directory is that it's state-based. This is actually a very important distinction, because the majority of sort of competing approaches, if you like, use a transaction-based system. Transaction-based systems are quicker to perform their operations, but they require that you have to install something on all of the different systems that you're connecting to, like an agent. Think of it like an agent. Whereas with the state-based system, things take longer because we basically have to confirm receipt. We don't have an automatic transaction. But it means we don't need to install any software on the source systems that we're speaking to, which is, you know, the way it has to be. And if you think about the cloud specifically, there's no other way it could work, right? Because we can't go around installing agents on somebody else's cloud, right? That's kind of the very opposite of the approach that's necessary when working with, you know, internet distributed systems. And so way back, you know, in 1995, when the guys that were working on this product first envisaged this space, they were thinking about what we're now talking about today in terms of identity federation, you know, using internet distributed systems, aka the cloud. So that leadership is the reason why, you know, Windows Azure and Windows Azure Active Directory specifically are able to move so fast, right, and improve the tooling at an incredible pace. I'm not just saying it because, you know, I've got the I'm wearing the T-shirt and all the rest of it, but seriously, none of the other vendors are anywhere close to the work that these guys are doing on the tooling and indeed in terms of understanding the problem space that customers face. If you think back to, if I had to give this talk at the last SharePoint conference, for all the people that asked me at the end of one of my sessions, what's the solution for us because we have more than one forest, at that time, all I could say is phone Microsoft. They'll be able to help you out, but I can't really tell you the details, right? Now, there's a fully documented, available connector for Office 365 for multi-forest scenarios, and a lot of also, you know, upfront guidance in terms of perhaps thinking about consolidating, etc. And that's an example of just how quickly they can move. And it fundamentally, the technology implementation per se may change, right? So the meta directory that I'm talking about today is known as Forefront Identity Manager, okay? And that's had numerous changes in its implementation, but fundamentally, it's still doing exactly the same thing it was doing in 1999. It's a state-based meta directory. And that's the foundation here. Point out one more time, though, before we move on to talk totally about the technology, the tooling's really only 10% of the battle. Okay, so for those of you who have already implemented this, you know, this, a lot of this will be review. But we do need to cover this for those who haven't, of course. We've got a bunch of options for identity, and I don't have all of them on this slide. I've deliberately not covered all of the options because I want to focus in on, you know, the key topic today in terms of using Windows Azure to host some of these things. But the other options are really a variation of one of these three on this slide. So when we think about deploying Office 365, we have choice to make about identity. And the impact really here is in predominantly the end user sign-in experience. So on the left-hand side, we have a thing that's called a cloud identity. That's an account within your Windows Azure Active Directory tenant. Now, this used to be called an online ID, okay? And believe me, I'm sure many of you experience this, but the naming and the frequency of changing of the naming confuses me as well. So I may slip and, you know, use the old terms and so on. This is great if you don't have Active Directory on premises. You know, this is really for the small, medium enterprise, maybe got quite a small number of employees, and, you know, how many people here are in that bucket? You don't have Active Directory on premises. Is there anybody here? Don't think so. Okay, so makes sense. It is a Microsoft conference after all. But you can see the obvious implications of that, right? The best thing about this, of course, is we don't have to install or configure any machines on premises, right? Perfect. But we're not going to get what unfortunately is still called single sign-on. It really shouldn't be called single sign-on, but that's the kind of term that seems to be picked up for this to describe, you know, you only have to enter your credentials once and you get access to various different systems. Technically, that is not single sign-on because technically single sign-on is impossible unless you only use one identity provider, right? But nevertheless, from the end user's perspective, you know, they're going to have to enter their credentials every time they start a session effectively. You can't do multi-factor authentication. You know, they're going to have the username and password that they log on to their laptop with, and then they're going to have their username and password that they log on to Office 365 with. We don't have any real control over the, you know, password policy, et cetera, in the cloud. So then if we can go to the middle option, which is combining the cloud identity with directory synchronization, in other words, a meta directory, you know, we can use our on-premises credentials and coexist. We still have the same problems in terms of there won't be any single sign-on, there won't be any multi-factor capability, still got two sets of credentials, but the good news is we just need a single server deployment. And if you are in this middle ground, the cloud identity and directory sync, you know, that server deployment does not need to be on premises, and that's kind of, you know, the point of the session is we can deploy the directory sync in Windows Azure. And then on the right-hand side of the slide, we have federated identity, and this is probably the area of most interest for all of you, seeing as that's the title of the talk. But this is, you know, the requirement for specifically hybrid scenarios, and it's the most rich user experience, and it gives you the most flexibility in terms of being able to do things like, and I've made a mistake on the slide there, that should say multi-factor authentication. Anytime a security guy says two-factor authentication, you know they're not actually a security guy, more of a marketing guy. So color me bad with that, but nevertheless, multi-factor authentication options are available there. The trouble with that one is, that's the one that requires the most deployment of infrastructure on premises in order to enable the scenario. So you're buying more stuff, deploying more stuff, sorry, to get to the cloud, as it were. So that's, you know, traditionally one of the hidden concepts of this space. Fundamentally, anything other than using the cloud identity, the left-hand side here, you're starting on the road to a long-term identity coexistence with Microsoft. And it's very important that that is understood. You know? So you might be thinking, well, the middle ground here is good for me now. But once you start down this road, you know, really federated identity is what you should be shooting for. Now, there's various flavors of federated identity, whether you want to use directory sync, whether you want to use the Forefront Identity Manager product, the full version, and so forth, or use somebody else's identity provider via the WorkSwift Office 365 program. But nevertheless, you're still talking about a long-term coexistence from an identity perspective. What that allows us to do, obviously, is the most interesting scenarios. But it is important that customers understand this is what we're talking about. And you know, once you go down this road, you know, can you put the car in reverse? Right? Probably not. So we need to be clear about that. Not being able to do that isn't a bad thing. It just needs to be understood clearly. Again, the implementation may change. It might, certainly the name is highly likely to change, but the core concepts here change. You're basically copying effectively the information and sharing it with Microsoft. So the journey to the cloud requires more infrastructure on premises. Okay, that's the fundamental reality. What's actually more important, though, is the preparation and cleanup of your existing infrastructure is going to be the thing that takes the longest and costs the most. I'm sure you've all seen this diagram before or a version of it. Really, just to explain that concept on the previous slide about the requirement to deploy more infrastructure. If we want to do single sign-on with federated identity, you know, we're going to need to deploy ADFS or a similar solution there in order to light up the scenario that we can, you know, sign in using our corporate credentials and never have to enter those creds again. Now, actually, you know, this is an old version of the diagram, and there's much nicer looking versions of this with, you know, perhaps a more up-to-date version of the name there on the right-hand side, but it's all the same thing. And you know, so for this, how many servers do we need? If we're Litware, and we assume that Litware is a 100,000 user corporation spread across the globe, we need at least 6 servers here for this to be highly available. Okay. Actually, it's 7 if you include the DeerSync machine. So you know, it's not a huge number of servers, but it's not it's not something to just sniff at. You know, SQL Server part of this is perhaps quite the most expensive. So it's not something that we can just kind of ignore and say, oh, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's a reasonable investment necessary. And of course, the more servers you have, the more you have to, you know, the more the burden of things like patching and updates and making sure that SSL certificates are being renewed, all those kind of things, you know, that on their own, each one isn't a big deal, but when you combine it all together, becomes a large burden. Some AD considerations. I mentioned, that the aside from deploying infrastructure, we're going to have to do some cleanup work. Again, this table is really just examples to illustrate a point. It's not intended to be complete, 100% coverage of all the things that you might have to think about. How many of you here have got a .local domain suffix? Yeah. So that's quite a few of you, right? Because quite some years ago, that was the recommended best practice for deploying Active Directory inside a corporation, right? It's a non-routable TLD. But the problem with that is, if you're in that situation and you want to implement Identity Federation for Office 365, you're going to have to change up the UPN of every user you want to be able to sign in. So it's not a little deal. I mean, there's plenty of ways to fix that with PowerShell in a very short space of time, but if you've got a .local domain suffix, you probably need to fill in quite a few change requests in order to run the PowerShell script, right? You're going to have to ask somebody else to do it. Could be very expensive and long-winded. So that's an example of the type of thing that we're going to need to think about and perform some degree of cleanup. And what I strongly recommend for customers considering Identity Federation is to look at engaging a third party to perform an Active Directory or directory system health check. So Microsoft services have one, Microsoft Premier Field Engineering will offer a thing called a risk assessment program. Other experts in the identity space have similar programs as well, maybe not quite as good as the RAP, but still valuable. You know, it's always, and that would be true if I was working on the project. I would, because you need that third party second opinion, if you like, because there's always could be something that you might miss or don't have access to. I did have a customer a few years ago, we're looking at identity federation in the very early days, and we did a bunch of work with the Active Directory team to understand what the status was, but it actually turned out that there were two Active Directory teams in this organization, and we were only speaking to one of them because there was a bun fight about funding going on, and it meant that the information about that the health check that was performed wasn't adequate. This was a situation where we weren't allowed to actually go ahead and connect and see for ourselves. We had to do everything via a proxy. So that's pretty important. Multiple distinct UPN suffixes in a single forest is quite common, actually, and is surprisingly common. Actually, it says there that there's a hot fix for ADFS. If you're running like the latest version of ADFS now, that's a non-consideration. You'll have that if you've got roll-up free or above. And then at the bottom, if you're in multi-forest scenario, which many of you were when I asked earlier, there's a lot of different choices to make there. Microsoft provide a thing called the Office 365 Connect, the FIM connector for Office 365. So a connector is the new name for a management agent in FIM with some fantastic guidance. But the guidance is good, but it's also like about 180 pages of guidance, right? So, and potentially, if at all, well, you've got decisions to make. There's a decision tree here where you want to think about whether we can consolidate. How, if we've got 20 forests, if you can get that down to 16, life is going to be a lot better. Right? It's not going to solve the entire problem, of course, but it's going to be a lot better. The less you have, the better it is, basically. So, lots of different elements to that, even though it's just a single line on this slide, that's quite a complex scenario. So just to kind of really provide examples of the type of things that we're going to need to deal with in terms of figuring out whether our Active Directory is in the right state to do federation. None of these things are unretrievable, right? You can go ahead and do it, but it's much better to fix it up front and have it in a clean state before starting. There's other flavors of those options. I mentioned the connector for FIM, there's Graph API, there's the Works with Office 365 Identity Program. That last one is hugely important because it allows us to use third-party identity providers. And they are there's a program which basically, to a certain extent, certifies them for use, and those vendors work very closely with Office 365 to enable them. If you want to know more about that particular program, the best place to go is Paul Andrews' session, which is on Thursday morning, where he's got a few slides on that, I'm sure. It's kind of one of his babies. Okay, so let's now switch gears a little bit and talk about how we can leverage Azure to accelerate the directory synchronization piece. Okay, so Windows Azure Active Directory Sync tool, which I think is WAADS, right? So that's the new name for what used to be called DirSync. Okay? It's a implementation of Forefront Identity Manager, which has been designed as a set it and forget it appliance. So you install this software on a server, you provide some configuration information, including things like the enterprise admin password, and it goes ahead and performs the directory synchronization from your on-premises Active Directory to the metaverse in Office 365, Windows Azure Active Directory. So traditionally, and for a long time in the recent past, it's been deployed on a box on-premises. There's problems with that, of course. Being able to do it technically is very straightforward, but getting the required approvals and so on in a lot of organizations is quite difficult because it's working with Active Directory. Also, you know, high availability can be a concern because this is a single server solution. It's not the only way to sync, but it is the most common. So why do we care about deploying this to the cloud? It's a bit of a silly question, really. I mean, you know, cloud has got to be the best option for if you don't, you know, without any other information, cloud is always going to be a better option from a cost perspective. There's no reason not to, basically, because if you think about this, you know, in all seriousness, if you're worried about deploying this to the cloud, then why would you be doing identity federation with the cloud, right? But it's really about, you know, decreasing the time to deployment, reducing deployment headaches, like having to argue with your directory systems admins about permissions and things like that. You know, providing a ability to have the DirSync instance be highly available without having to go to Forefront Identity Manager, the full product, by, you know, leveraging what Windows Azure gives us, right? And it's going to reduce the number of servers on premises at least by one, okay? And every little helps. That's going to reduce your cost as well. So solution overview, as you might imagine, it's fairly straightforward. Anytime you see a architecture diagram that's simple, that's good, right? That's good architecture. Every time you see a architecture diagram that's like complicated and it's got hundreds of boxes and, you know, lots of disks and spindles and, you know, things like that, that's going to give you problems, right? I mean, you know, it's just the reality. So it's not just, you know, the kind of new look and feel. It's also, you know, I love it when I see a diagram that looks like this because simple is best. And it's very straightforward. You know, we need a Windows Azure virtual network. We deploy a machine there, which is then we're then going to install the DirSync tool, or what's called, you know, Windows Azure Active Directory Sync tool on that machine. We're going to configure a VPN between on-premises environment, or on-premises network, I should say, and the Windows Azure network, and we're good to go. We set up DirSync the same way we would if we were deploying that machine on-premises. So our phases, I know this might be a little bit small. The first phase is to deal with the requirements or prerequisites for the solution space overall. It's perhaps the most difficult, if you like. We want to make sure that we have our Azure network configured correctly. We want to make sure that we have the firewall ports open that are necessary to enable the routing, configuring the VPN. We don't really have any kind of requirements on what type of VPN it is, you know, so you can use your solution of choice there. The second stage, basically, configure that, get that set up. Then we'll go ahead and create the virtual machine that's going to run DirSync. And, you know, we're obviously going to make use of the system requirements, et cetera, for the AD sync tool, just the same as if we were considering deploying on premises, before I get told off. Then we'll go ahead and activate Active Directory synchronization over in the tenant administration in the Office 365 portal. That's just, you know, simply a one-phase click in the portal. You might have to wait a little while for that to get activated, but it's very straightforward. Then we'll go ahead, install, configure DirSync on the machine as we would on premises, and validate that it's performing sync operations, making sure that we address any potential things that may happen, like if we're doing an exceedingly large number of objects, you know, we may have to get that opened up, that capability opened up, make sure it's reliable, etc. And then at that point, of course, just as normal, we can activate and assign licenses to the users. One of the questions that comes up quite frequently is that, you know, okay, that sounds good. I really don't want the machine on premises. But, you know, I'm not a VPN guy, I'm not really a firewall guy, you know, I know that's going to be difficult for me. So, you know, is it really worth it? You know, if we're really getting the benefit of this? And I think the best way to kind of address that question is to talk to the high availability scenario, right? If you do it on premises yourself, how are you providing high availability for the AD sync tool machine? Because it's not something that is designed in there. And so, you know, it all comes back to your availability target for the overall solution. And unless you're an organization where the information about users doesn't change hardly at all, you need that high availability for this key component of the overall solution space. So that's really the key win here. Some other critical considerations here. The VPN that's required, I mentioned this before, you know, we're not specific about requiring it to be a Microsoft one or whatever. You know, we can use pretty much any one we like there. The address space, routing tables, and firewall rules are very important. Make sure that you have enough IP addresses available in your address space, but you can also, you know, consider other Azure virtual networks as well. It's not really a limit to that at this stage, or it's not a practical limit to that at this stage. The on-premises considerations for your Active Directory, they remain 100% valid. Okay, they're all the same because it's the same data we're working with. We're not changing anything there. We can't get out of jail here in any way. There's no silver bullet to dealing with the data cleansing and health check type aspects. Regardless of those things, and they're not really difficult, they might just be unusual for SharePoint practitioners, let's just say. Regardless of those things, it's still a lot less work and always, in my experience, faster than deploying on scratch on premises. Again, it's not the technical things that are difficult. You know, we all know that we can do these kind of things in a virtual machine rig ourselves with no problem, but it's you know, the change control aspects and operational service management aspects when you're doing it for a real project that are the barriers. Okay, so I've gone a little short, unfortunately. I always intended to just demonstrate this, and then I had hit a problem with my Azure virtual network, because I'm not really a network guy. I don't really understand routing tables. I just know to say routing instead of routing when I'm in America. But the reality is the demo was kind of weak anyway, right? Because I basically, you know, I have a VM, I install the sync tool, and I activate the sync on Office 365, and I hit go, and I end up with some user profiles in Office 365. I mean, there's not, you know, deploying it on Azure doesn't really doesn't change anything in terms of operational characteristics. So yeah, I'm about 10 minutes early, but I'm happy to take questions in a second as well. To wrap up, basically, really the takeaways is that the cloud and Office 365 specifically, because it's the leader, if you like, in this space in terms of collaboration style scenarios, is really driving identity management to the forefront of our thinking. And Microsoft, you know, clearly is a leader in the identity management space because, you know, the solutions based around Office drive that. That's one of the key reasons for that. We spoke briefly about the core concepts of doing identity federation for Office 365, and then, of course, talked about the using Windows Azure to improve delivery time for directory synchronization. The deployment is fully documented at the link on the bottom of the deck there, the slide there, sorry. That gives you a full walkthrough of all the prerequisites, firewall ports you need, et cetera, in there. And of course, I'm always happy to take questions via email, et cetera, if there's things that we don't cover during the conference. So with that, I'm out of material. I'm happy to take questions, but if you do have a question, I'd like to ask if you could come to the microphone so that those are recorded for the guys that will watch this later over the internet, whatever. But I believe there's only one microphone, which is just here on this side. Otherwise, thanks very much for coming. Hope it was useful, and enjoy the rest of the conference.
Hi, go ahead. We have a scenario, Office 365, where we would like some users to come through the corporate LAN connect and hit certain security things before they go to Office 365, so say for CRM. And then we'd like, but we would like everyone else to be able to use the, you know, the five licenses for Office at home.
Yep.
And we really don't want them to have to install a VPN on their home machine and VPN in. So, you know, I don't know if you have any ideas or if that's been a requirement that has come up where you want to treat users differently. So if I were to hit something from home,
yep,
and I say, oh, but I'm a CRM guy, nope, you need a VPN in type of thing, or distinguish the machine itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a reasonably common sort of customer request or desired, you know, kind of functionality. There are ways that you can address it partially today, using doing either additional configuration on an ADFS or a proxy inside the organization, which takes care of your CRM guy. But then for the, you know, the folks at home, that's really where you need to look at leveraging a external identity hookup, and that's really where it's not fully complete.
Okay.
But there are, I am aware of two organizations that are working today on a solution for that. They're not available in the marketplace right now. And unfortunately, I'm not in a position to comment publicly about what Microsoft are doing there.
Okay.
So read between the lines.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep.
No problem.
This question is about the logon experience. Our users currently log on to their Windows machines and they're authenticated against Active Directory.
Mm-hmm.
They then access SharePoint on-premise. It's seamless because it passes their credentials to the on-premise environment. Is there, from what I understand, if they go to the, in a hybrid scenario, even with SSO set up, when they go to that online service, they'll still have to provide their email address in order to get into the online service. It won't be seamless, and otherwise, it's really not SSO from the user perspective, because they have to log on the machine,
yeah,
and they gotta log in again when they go from the on-premise to the
Yeah, is this
online.
Is this a browser session you're talking about, or?
Yeah, browser
yeah, okay,
session.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned in the talk, you know, the single sign-on, you know, it's not really that. It's a cross-process cookie consideration. You shouldn't be, other users, when they interactively log on, are they using the UPN to log on, or are they doing like domain/user?
Domain.
Okay, yeah, so the real answer there is if they log on using their UPN, so, you know, their email address is probably the way to do it, then that problem will go away. They will be seamlessly authenticated.
So even though they're just given a Kerberos ticket, right, which they're passing on-premise, right? Now that's why that works, but I don't understand how it's going to work when it goes to Office 365. What are they passing there when they go to that site?
Well,
it's
a custom, the authentication mechanism used is a custom FBA approach. So there's a cookie involved, basically. And if you remember, well, there used to be a thing that you would need to install on the clients, which would manage that behind the scenes. I think it's like the authentication helper, sign-in. Yeah, sign-in helper. But that's now part of Office by default, effectively, except, you know, so if you've got latest versions of things, that deals with it. So that's how it's passing it through.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so, you know, if you can, if you're in a position to do it, try it with one user, the UPN, as the logon, and if you hit problems, follow up with me and we can get to the bottom of that for you.
Thank you.
No problem.
On one slide, you mentioned in the local domain scenario to use the SMTP address as an identity claim. Actually, I tried to do that in a demo scenario, and one problem that I hit was if you log on from externally to Office 365 and enter your email address, this value gets forwarded to the ADFS on server 2012 R2 that I used in that scenario, And you cannot log in with that email address in that case.
Yeah.
It's a bit a problem for the user to change the username then.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a bit of a, I should probably change the way that's described. I'm just trying to find it in the slide here. So where did it go? I just went past it again, didn't I? Yeah. So where I say use the SMTP address if possible, that's kind of confusing. That doesn't mean you know, use the SMTP value. It just means that the UPN should be the same as the SMTP address because it makes it easy for users. So that you know, because you know, it's like you've got to tell a user that they've got to change their username. That's going to freak them out, but they know what their email address is. So it's using the same value data rather than as opposed to using the SMTP as the claim. Okay. So apologies.
So there is no option in 2012 R2 to override the login process anymore to achieve that kind of scenario? Because we did that in 28 R2 with the ADFS 2.0. We modified the login form quite heavily to...
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, you're customizing. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there is. I don't know the... We'd need to have a conversation in more detail there, but there is a way to get there. I'm just not familiar with that off the top of my head. Okay. I'm, you know, using the SMTP address as the claim, the primary identity claim, isn't what I was getting at here, but it's still a valid thing to want to do for other reasons. So yeah, we could pick that up.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Sorry, I am listening. I'm just trying to make sure I don't go over. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have two questions. And before I ask you the questions, let me try to explain my scenario. So I have, let us say, my company has multiple clients, and I want to put together client portals for each one of them. And I'm using host name site collection and multi-tenancy following your blog. And I
that was your first mistake.
So the thing is, why do you say that's a mistake? Because every site collection has to be so isolated that it has to be completely isolated. No data.
Yep, sure.
So why do you say this mistake?
Oh, it's, I'm just joking. Yeah, what you've done isn't wrong, but following my blog is always pretty dangerous, right? I mean, you know.
I know it completely 100% edge, it does not work, so I had to do some research, but finally it worked. I have all these things working too.
Cool.
My question is around identity federation. Now I have two options. One option is that I add authentication providers for those clients who are, and those users do not exist in my user store. They have, let us say they are coming from SiteMinder. And I add those SiteMinder as authentication provider to my SharePoint site.
Yep.
And I add my AD users also, they automatically are there, so they are there. So it has two auth providers. SiteMinder and AD. Now, I have not tested this, but I have this confusion. If I do that right on my SharePoint environment, then it has to go to the login URL which exists outside of my domain.
Yep.
Would that work?
It will work, yes. There is some customization required there, specifically for the SiteMinder users. You have to understand that multi-tenancy with SharePoint on-premises from a identity perspective is intended to be used with an Active Directory principle because, you know, that's what it's designed for. So basically the answer, the short version of the answer, rather than, you know, because it's quite a complex space, is you have to, if you're using multi-tenancy yourself with the product in an on-premises style, you have to bridge the gap, you know, because that's a piece of work that isn't, it's a valid scenario. It's not something the product natively does on it inside the SharePoint box. So you're going to have to build that customization to bridge the gap in the same way that Microsoft have done extra work to enable other identity providers for Office 365, but that's not part of the SharePoint product. And I can point you in the direction of a couple of other customers that have done similar things.
So you are saying natively it would not work? Is what
no, natively it won't, not without additional customization.
Because it is outside of domain, that's why it would not work?
It's not it's not a limitation of trusted domains or anything like that. It's just purely because that was never part of the implementation, right, of the product. So it's just not there.
Okay, and let us go in the second solution. Let us say I put an ADFS in between, or any federation service provider in between. Now that is connected to AD and SiteMinder.
Yep.
And for my site, SharePoint site collection is having that ADFS as auth provider. Then does it need any customization?
No. No, but then you're going to hit a problem with profile synchronization, which will require customization. So you can use ADFS to bridge the gap. You could use UAG to bridge the gap as well. That's a potential option if you, depending on whether you're able to get hold of it. But you still need to, you're going to need to think about profile sync then for the, because now you're using trusted claims provider. How are you going to get the profile information in? If you don't care about the profile for your particular scenario, then that's fine.
I don't care about profile. Okay. I'm not getting any information. I just need them to be able to log in and look at it.
Okay. Well, in that case, you're good until profile properties are important to you, and then at that point you're back to looking at some form of customization. Yeah.
Then you can have some. I understand that part of. So, yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Okay, no problem.
Hi, two quick questions. And I apologize if you had already answered this one before, but the directory sync application, do you need one per forest, or can you set up one server and synchronize multiple forests with that?
No, if you have multiple forests, DSync is not an option for you. You need to look at a full version of Forefront Identity Manager and the Office 365 connector or management agent. It should.
And is FIM something else that you could host in Azure?
Yes. Yeah, actually, technically there's no reason why you couldn't leverage Windows Azure, same kind of configuration in terms of the routing, firewall, blah, 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 a few extra ports. But remember, DSync is still FIM. It's just a constrained version.
Right, okay.
Yeah, that's basically the approach there is to go the full FIM. That actually kind of, if you've got multi-forest, it does make sense. And you get you get options on high availability and et cetera. But yes, you can still go ahead and use Azure as the hosting platform for that
right.
infrastructure.
Okay. Yeah. And then second question, if you're using something like SMTP address as your primary identifier and that changes, is it smart enough to pick up that change and kind of migrate your profile to that new identity, or are you going to
yes.
log in and hit a new profile?
Smart enough is perhaps the wrong kind of way
is
to describe
kind of
it, but
some...
yeah, assuming everything is operating correctly and the sync performing within the time limits and on the scheduled basis that you want it to, it'll be updated. It depends how frequent that, that's not the kind of change that is going to be happening a lot, but somebody getting married, they change their last name, et cetera, those kind of things. Yeah,
okay.
It can deal with that.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hey, good morning.
Hey.
For a number of applications in our environment today for single sign-on, we use a web-based service called Okta.
Okay.
A-K-T-A.
Yep.
Wondering mm-hmm. if you have experience with that and your opinions on that.
I have experience with it. I don't have a lot of experience with that product. I know the vendor, etc. The reality is that they're 10 a penny, those solutions. There's a lot of very similar, there's a good 20, 25 or so very similar. They're all useful. I guess the thing I don't like about it, and it's very much a personal opinion, is it's that web-based style. I know that works for some scenarios and certainly for some user communities, but that's not something I'm a big fan of because, I like the idea of signing in to my laptop or whatever, from the end user's perspective, it's the laptop taking care of everything, right? The operating system, whatever, that's taking care of wherever I log on. I don't have enough hands-on customer experience of it to really say, where it's where its faults are and where its pros are. I mean, but there's a lot of similar solutions, and indeed, it's an awkward question for me to answer honestly, because I actually work for a company that provides a direct competitor to that. So I don't want to, you know, we could have a conversation more privately about that if you want to. Yeah.
Hi. I know you said that site-to-site VPN is required, but is there any workarounds to that?
I'm sorry, what is required?
I know you said that director synchronization requires a site-to-site VPN to be established.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any workaround to that requirement?
Well, not really, no. I mean, you need that connectivity between Azure and your on-premises directory. That's the requirement there. So,
is it specific ports, though, that...
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head. There's 3 ports. It's 40... I can't remember them. Sorry, these are not the kind of details I remember, especially not when I'm in Vegas.
That information's available, obviously, right?
Yeah, the link that was on one of the slides there, that's got the details. There's only 3 ports. It's very straightforward. It's not like, you know, it's doing, like, dynamic ports or anything like that. So, when we say VPN, that's the general term, you know, how you... implement that, how you achieve that connectivity is your call. It doesn't have to be, you know, strictly speaking, a VPN. It could be, you know, routing a remote access.
Okay, so if I didn't want to define the virtual network on Azure and then set up the VPN, then I can just open up those ports and specify
various
target IP addresses?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, and actually at the very bottom of that article that I linked to, there's screenshots of them doing exactly that configuration.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Hi, two quick questions. Federation identity management. The one question I have is, why are we syncing directories if we can manage the identity in one location and federate to the target? Why do we have to replicate directories, and what's the direction there? Second bullet or question is, can you speak to the comprehensive logout, the challenges, methodology, and patterns to support that? Because it seems to be a big question mark on how do you manage sessions and a logout, and what does that mean?
Yeah, so great questions, and it basically goes back to one of my points earlier, whereby, you know, this is a very much a journey, and we're still, you know, we're a long way down the road, but we're still at the start of the road as opposed to near the end, and, you know, The first part of the question is, you know, why do we need to do this? Why can't we do, like, just federation, right? Rather, why are we copying stuff around? And the reason, really, for that is, historically, you know, we have to remember that these products were originally designed for deployment, you know, on premises, and they've had, you know, work on top of that to make it cloud ready, effectively. And so, you know, the reason specifically with SharePoint, we need them there in order to do the profile sync. It's things like that, ensuring that the global address list in Exchange is there. And, you know, yes, you can, you know, eventually you'll get to a stage where that isn't necessary as the service evolves. But it's kind of, we need it now to bridge the gap, to get to where we were before, to where we want to be fully. So that's the first part of the question. In terms of, yeah, you're absolutely right. The overall information, guidance, you know, consulting experience with customers previously to help, you know, guide everybody along the way needs to improve massively, absolutely. And I think that's recognized, certainly know for a fact it's recognized by, you know, Microsoft and the guys on 365. You know, it's kind of Paul Andrews' role is to kind of, you know, evangelize this stuff. There's also, you know, a small number of very good, very experienced companies that can help with that stuff, like the Oxford Computing Group is one example from where I'm from. But again, it's something that it's still a little bit new in many respects, and so it's going to take a while for that to, you know, the snowball effect, if you like, for it to be more commonplace and to be better guidance and so on. Yeah, I mean, that's the story of, you know, the changing landscape, basically. And I'd certainly be interested if you had you know, if you had direct sort of examples or explicit examples of areas where you think things are weak, you know, I'd be able to take that feedback and pass it back and make sure that, well, not make sure, but, you know, put that on the table to try and get that addressed. Because, you know, I have a certain amount of experience, but it's kind of narrow to my customers and the sectors that I work in and so on. So always looking for, you know, other people's perspectives there to make sure that we cover the bases.
All right, thank you. And the last question, I'll send an email on to you about those questions if we can follow up. What is your acronym or term for the, quote, SSO, as you refer to it?
I try and avoid using single sign-on because, well, fundamentally, it doesn't really exist, right? There's many solutions that purport to provide a single sign-on-like experience, speaking to the end user kind of, but from a technical perspective, you know, single sign-on, the only way you can do single sign-on is if you have a single identity source and everybody uses it, right, for everything. Otherwise, you end up with multiple identities, and by simulating or bridging a gap so that the end user doesn't have to provide the credentials, you know, isn't single sign-on, but that's, you know, unfortunately what it's become, that term is used to describe. And it's kind of, it's one of the holy grails of enterprise computing, right? And it has been for 25 years, it will be for another 25 years. It's a bit like, you know, with Windows 8, you sign in potentially using your Microsoft account, right? And then you connect other things like Facebook and Twitter and whatever. So from an end user's perspective, that's single signing me into all these different things. But it's not, right? I mean, it's using a certificate exchange, secured secret, right? I mean, so, yeah, that's really just sort of me being a bit of a technical nitpicker on the term. I don't use a different term to describe it because that wouldn't help, because the customer thinks of it as single sign-on. So you kind of have to stick with that.
All right, thank you.
No problem.
Hi. Is there any consideration that that might push you to put your GearSync in Azure instead of on-premises?
I mean, the primary reason to consider putting it in Azure is to speed up the time it takes to do it, especially if you're in a very heavily controlled environment where you have to, you know, go through multiple service providers to get change requests for things. And then high availability is the other one.
Okay, because by experience, it's far more complicated to discuss with security team to open VPNs.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the reality is anytime you ask a firewall admin or a security admin to open something up, you're only going to get one answer, right? And it's got two letters. And, you know, it's no, right? I mean, that's the default answer. That's their job. So, yeah, it can be very difficult to get those things opened and to justify them.
Okay.
Those are the kind of things that these are the kind of, if the customer wants to go cloud, the customer has got to change the culture of the teams and so forth that are managing firewalls, right? And that's the bottom line. I'm not saying it's easy, but those are the types of challenges that must be overcome. Otherwise, that organization isn't cloud ready.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is you've got to take each customer individually and make a judgment call, you know, what's going to be quickest, and make sure that the your customer stakeholder, you know, understands the consequences of the options. And yeah.
Okay, thanks.
There's not that much in it, you know, yeah, between the two.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Good morning. My question is about the hybrid deployment model of SharePoint, like online and on-premise. So in this scenario, if I have some portion like my internet or intranet typically on SharePoint online and other departmental sites, for example, which are legal, finance, on-premise.
Yeah.
So which one, like ADFS or Director Sync, would be the ideal solution to go for?
The ideal solution for that scenario, in fact, the required solution for that is to do Directory Sync and Identity Federation. Without going into, you know, specific functional aspects of the deployment, you're going to need that if you want search across both corpuses, etc. So yeah, federated identity and deer sync.
So both I have to use go with both
yeah.
of those?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
No problem. Okay. Hey.
The question is actually about our on-premise deployment.
Thank you for the patience, by the way.
Thank you. The question is about our on-premise deployment of 2013, where the scenario is we have users authenticating against EDI, and we're looking to expose that externally via the same URL.
Okay.
And bridging the gap for authentication using EDIFS, which would then be a claim provider to SharePoint, yeah? When that user rocks up at the front door to SharePoint, they're effectively a different user, as in the ones issued by a claims provider and one's a Windows provider.
Yep.
Is there a way of merging them back together, or should we be looking at putting EDIFS on internally initially and only using the claim provider on the web app?
Yeah, so the answer is yes, there is a way to kind of merge them back, but you don't want to go there. It's a nasty solution, and it's going to cause you more problems later on than it's kind of helping you with. There's three or four different approaches there. The one you've mentioned, you make the internal users use the ADFS, that will work. Custom logon page would work as well, so a little bit of custom code could deal with that problem quite easily, and some fair few customers do that, and they're successful. Or you know, AN other vendors' gateway also could provide similar capabilities.
If you add UAG into the mix, does it actually issue a Windows claim, or does it issue a Windows identity or a claim identity?
That would be a Windows identity. As would be the new web proxy in Windows Server 2012 R2.
Yeah.
Web proxy, what am I talking about? The publishing thing, that's name I can't remember.
I know what you're
saying. Yeah. So I would, that would be, because that's doing basically constrained delegation on behalf. So yeah, those type of solutions solve the problem.
In your personal opinion, would you go to the additional effort to put in ADFS as a clean provider, or go down the Windows-based identity?
Personally, I would always prefer Windows authentication, but I know that's not the future direction. So that's just kind of from my background and with my customers, that's always the easiest solution and enables the most functional scenarios in the product, right? I mean, have you got BI in the mix at all in this deployment?
There will be in the future, yes.
Yeah, so you know, that's kind of pushing you pretty heavily towards Windows credentials, at least for the time being.
I guess, but the concern was it's not the future.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a painful situation to be in right now. We'll kind of bridge that gap, but I would prefer that route, even though I know that that's not the future.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
No problem. Hey, guys.